Chapter 35. Steading Tsofu. The river hills on which the city Kyrian stood gave way to flatter lands and forests when Rand and the others had ridden half a day, the Shinarans still with their armor on the pack horses. There were no roads where they went, only a scattering of cart tracks and few farms or villages. Varin pressed for speed, and Ingtar, grumbling constantly that they were letting themselves be tricked, that Fain would never have told them where he was really going, yet grumbling at the same time about riding in the opposite direction from Tomanhead, as if part of him believed and Tomanhead were not months away except by the way they took, Ingtar obliged her. The gray owl banner flew on the wind of their passage. Rand rode with grim determination, avoiding conversation with Varin. He had this thing to do, this duty, Ingtar would have called it, and then he could be free of Aes Sedai once and for all. Perrin seemed to share something of his mood, staring straight ahead at nothing as they rode. When they finally stopped for the night at the edge of a forest, with full dark almost on them, Perrin asked loyal questions about the steading. Trollocs would never enter a steading, would wolves? Loyal replied shortly that it was only creatures of the shadow that were reluctant to enter steading. And Aes Sedai, of course, since they could not touch the true source inside a steading, or channel the one power. The Ogier himself appeared the most reluctant of all to go to steading Tsofu. Matt was the only one who seemed eager, almost desperately so. His skin looked as if he had not seen the sun in a year, and his cheeks had begun to go hollow, though he said he felt ready to run a foot race. Varin put her hands on him for healing before he rolled into his blankets and again before they mounted their horses in the morning, but it made no difference in how he looked. Even Huron frowned when he looked at Matt. The sun stood high on the second day when Varin suddenly sat up straight in her saddle and looked around. Beside her, Ingtar gave a start. Rand could not see anything different about the forest now surrounding them. The undergrowth was not too thick. They had found an easy way under the canopy of oak and hickory, black gum and beech, pierced here and there by a tall pine or leather leaf, or the white slash of a paper bark. But as he followed them, he suddenly felt a chill pass through him, as though he had leaped into a waterwood pond in winter. It flashed through him and was gone, leaving behind a feeling of refreshment. And there was a dull and distant sense of loss, too, though he could not imagine of what. Every rider, as he reached that point, gave a jerk or made some exclamation. Huron's mouth dropped open, and Una whispered, "Bloody flaming." Then he shook his head as if he could not think of anything else to say. There was a look of recognition in Perrin's yellow eyes. Loyal took a deep, slow breath and let it out.
"It feels good to be back in a steading."
Frowning, Rand looked around. He had expected a steading to be somehow different, but except for that one chill, the forest was the same as what they had been riding through all day. There was the sudden sense of being rested, of course. Then an ogier stepped out from behind an oak. She was shorter than Loyal, which meant she stood head and shoulders taller than Rand, but with the same broad nose and big eyes, the same wide mouth and tufted ears. Her eyebrows were not so long as Loyal's, though, and her features seemed delicate beside his, the tufts on her ears finer. She wore a long green dress and a green cloak embroidered with flowers and carried a bunch of silver bell blossoms, as if she had been gathering them. She looked at them calmly, waiting. Loyal scrambled down from his tall horse and bowed hastily. Rand and the others did the same, if not so quickly as Loyal. Even Varin inclined her head. Loyal gave their names formally, but he did not mention the name of his steading. For a moment, the Ogier girl, Rand was sure she was no older than Loyal, studied them, then smiled.
"Be welcome to steading Tsofu."
Her voice was a lighter version of Loyal's, too, the softer rumble of a smaller bumblebee.
"I am Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Alar. Be welcome. We have had so few human visitors since the stonemasons left Kyrian, and now so many at once. Why, we even had some of the traveling people, though, of course, they left when the... Oh, I talk too much. I will take you to the elders, only..."
She searched among them for the one in charge and settled finally on Varin.
"Aes Sedai, you have so many men with you and armed. Could you please leave some of them outside? Forgive me, but it is always unsettling to have very many armed humans in the steading at once.
Of course, Aerith, Varen said. Ingtar will see to it. Ingtar gave orders to Uno, and so it was that he and Huron were the only Shinarans to follow Aerith deeper into the steading. Leading his horse like the others, Rand looked up as Loyal came closer, with many glances at Aerith up ahead with Varen and Ingtar. Huron walked midway between, staring around in amazement, though Rand was not sure at what exactly. Loyal bent to speak quietly.
Is she not beautiful, Rand? And her voice sings.
Matt snickered, but when Loyal looked at him questioningly, he said, Very pretty, Loyal. A little tall for my taste, you understand, but very pretty, I'm sure. Loyal frowned uncertainly, but nodded.
Yes, she is.
His expression lightened.
It does feel good to be back in a steading. Not that the longing was taking me, you understand.
The longing? Perrin said. I do not understand, Loyal.
We Ogier are bound to the steading, Perrin. It is said that before the breaking of the world, we could go where we wished for as long as we wished, like you humans. But that changed with the breaking. Ogier were scattered like every other people, and they could not find any of the steading again. Everything was moved. Everything changed. Mountains, rivers, even the seas.
Everybody knows about the breaking, Matt said impatiently. What does it have to do with this longing?
It was during the exile, while we wandered lost, that the longing first came on us. The desire to know the steading once more. To know our homes again. Many died of it.
Loyal shook his head sadly.
More died than lived. When we finally began to find the steading again, one at a time, in the years of the Covenant of the Ten Nations, it seemed we had defeated the longing at last. But it had changed us, put seeds in us. Now if an Ogier is outside too long, the longing comes again. He begins to weaken, and he dies if he does not return.
Do you need to stay here a while? Rand asked anxiously. There's no need to kill yourself to go with us.
I will know it when it comes, Loyal laughed. It will be long before it is strong enough to cause harm to me. Why, Dalar spent 10 years among the sea folk without ever seeing a steading, and she came safely home.
An Ogier woman appeared out of the trees, pausing a moment to speak with Aerith and Varen. She looked Ingtar up and down and seemed to dismiss him, which made him blink. Her eyes swept across Loyal, flicked over Huron and the Emmonsfielders, before she went off into the forest again. Loyal seemed to be trying to hide behind his horse.
Besides, he said, peering cautiously across his saddle after her, it is a dull life in the steading compared to traveling with 3 Taviran.
If you are going to start that again, Matt muttered, and Loyal spoke up quickly.
3 friends, then. You are my friends, I hope.
I am, Rand said simply, and Perrin nodded. Matt laughed. How could I not be friends with somebody who dices so badly? He threw up his hands when Rand and Perrin looked at him. Oh, all right, I like you, Loyal. You're my friend. Just don't go on about... Sometimes you're as bad to be around as Rand. His voice sank to a mutter. At least we're safe here in a steading. Rand grimaced. He knew what Matt meant. Here in a steading, where I can't channel. Perrin punched Matt's shoulder, but looked sorry that he had when Matt grimaced at him with that gaunt face. It was the music Rand became aware of first, unseen flutes and fiddles in a jolly tune that floated through the trees, and deep voices singing and laughing. Clear the field, smooth it low, let no weed or stubble stand. Here we labor, here we toil, here the towering trees will grow. Almost at the same moment, he realized that the huge shape he was seeing through the trees was a tree itself, with a rigid, buttressed trunk that must have been 20 paces thick. Gaping, he followed it up with his eyes, up through the forest canopy, to branches spreading like the top of a gigantic mushroom, a good 100 paces above the ground. And beyond it were taller still. Burn me. Matt breathed. You could build 10 houses from just one of those. 50 houses.
Cut down a great tree?
Loyal sounded scandalized, and more than a little angry. His ears were stiff and still, his long eyebrows down on his cheeks.
We never cut down one of the great trees, not unless it dies, and they almost never do. Few survived the breaking, but some of the largest were seedlings during the Age of Legends.
I'm sorry, Matt said. I was just saying how big they are. I won't hurt your trees. Loyal nodded, seeming mollified. More Ogier appeared now, walking among the trees. Most seemed intent on whatever they were about. Though all looked at the newcomers and even gave a friendly nod or a small bow, none stopped or spoke. They had a curious way of moving, in some manner blending a careful deliberateness with an almost childlike carefree joyfulness. They knew and liked who and what they were and where they were, and they seemed at peace with themselves and everything around them. Rand found himself envying them. Few of the Ogier men were any taller than Loyal, but it was easy to pick out the older men. One and all, they wore mustaches as long as their dangling eyebrows and narrow beards under their chins. All of the younger were smooth-shaven, like Loyal. Many of the men were in their shirt sleeves and carried shovels and mattocks or saws and buckets of pitch. The others wore plain coats that buttoned to the neck and flared about their knees like kilts. The women seemed to favor embroidered flowers, and many wore flowers in their hair, too. The embroidery was limited to the cloaks of the younger women. The older women's dresses were embroidered as well, and some women with gray hair had flowers and vines from neck to hem. A handful of the Ogier, women and girls for the most part, did seem to take special notice of Loyal. He walked staring straight ahead, ears twitching more wildly the further they went. Rand was startled to see an Ogier apparently walking up out of the ground, out of one of the grassy, wildflower-covered mounds that lay scattered all among the trees here. Then he saw windows in the mounds, and an Ogier woman standing at one apparently rolling a pie crust, and realized he was looking at Ogier homes. The window frames were stone, but they not only seemed natural formations, they appeared to have been sculpted by wind and water over generations. The great trees, with their massive trunks and spreading roots as thick as horses, needed a great deal of room between them, but several grew right in the town. Dirt ramps took the paths over the roots. In fact, aside from the pathways, the only way to tell town from forest at a glance was a large open space in the center of the town, around what could only be the stump of one of the great trees. Nearly 100 paces across, its surface was polished as smooth as any floor, and there were steps built up to it at several places. Rand was imagining how tall that tree had been when Aerith spoke loudly enough for them all to hear.
Here come our guests.
3 human women came walking around the side of the huge stump. The youngest were carrying a wooden bowl.
Aiel, Ingtar said. Maidens of the Spear. As well I did leave Massima with the others.
Yet he stepped away from Varen and Aerith and reached over his shoulder to loosen his sword in its scabbard. Rand studied the Aiel with an uneasy curiosity. They were what too many people had tried to tell him he was. 2 of the women were mature, the other little more than a girl, but all 3 were tall for women. Their short-cut hair ranged from a reddish-brown to almost golden, with a narrow shoulder-length tail left long at the back. They wore loose breeches tucked into soft boots, and all their clothes were some shade of brown or gray or green. He thought the garments would fade into rock or woods almost as well as a warder's cloak. Short bows poked over their shoulders, and quivers and long knives hung at their belts, and each carried a small round shield of hide and a cluster of spears with short shafts and long points. Even the youngest moved with a grace that suggested she knew how to use the weapons she carried. Abruptly, the women became aware of the other humans. They seemed as startled at being startled as they did at the sight of Rand and the others, but they moved like lightning. The youngest one shouted, "Shinarins!" and turned to set the bowl carefully behind her. The other 2 quickly lifted brown cloths from around their shoulders, wrapping them around their heads instead. The older women were raising black veils across their faces, hiding everything but their eyes, and the youngest straightened to imitate them. Crouching low, they advanced at a deliberate pace, shields held forward with their clusters of spears, except for the one each woman held ready in her other hand. Ingtar's sword came out of its sheath.
Stand clear, Aes Sedai. Aerith, stand clear.
Huron snatched out his swordbreaker, wavered between cudgel and sword for his other hand. After another glance at the Aiel's spears, he chose the sword.
You must not,
the Ogier girl protested. Wringing her hands, she turned from Ingtar to the Aiel and back.
You must not.
Rand realized the Heronmark blade was in his hands. Perrin had his axe half out of the loop at his belt and was hesitating, shaking his head.
Are you too crazy? Matt demanded.
His bow still slanted across his back.
I don't care if they are Aiel. They're women. Stop this, Perrin demanded. Stop this immediately.
The Aiel never broke stride, and the Aes Sedai clenched her fists in frustration. Matt moved back to put a foot in his stirrup.
I'm leaving, he announced. You hear me? I'm not staying to let them stick those things in me, and I'm not going to shoot a woman.
The pact, Loyal was shouting. Remember the pact.
It had no more effect than the continued pleas from Varen and Aerith. Rand noticed that both the Aes Sedai and the Ogier girl were keeping well out of the Aiel's way. He wondered if Matt had the right idea. He was not sure he could hurt a woman, even if she was trying to kill him. What decided him was the thought that even if he did manage to reach Red Saddle, the Aiel were now no more than 30 paces away. He suspected those short spears could be thrown that far. As the women came closer, still crouching, spears ready, he stopped worrying about not hurting them and began worrying about how to stop them from hurting him. Nervously, he sought the void, and it came. And the distant thought floated outside it that it was only the void. The glow of Sidene was not there. The emptiness was more empty than he had ever remembered. Vaster, like a hunger great enough to consume him. A hunger for more. There was supposed to be something more. Abruptly, an Ogier strode in between the two groups, his narrow beard quivering.
What is the meaning of this? Put up your weapons.
He sounded scandalized.
For you.
His glare took in Ingtar and Huron, Rand and Perrin, and did not spare Matt for all his empty hands.
There is some excuse, but for you.
He rounded on the Aiel women, who had stopped their advance.
Have you forgotten the pact?
The women uncovered their heads and faces so hastily that it seemed they were trying to pretend they had never been covered. The girl's face was bright red, and the other women looked abashed. One of the older women, the one with the reddish hair, said,
Forgive us, Tree Brother. We remember the pact, and we would not have bared steel, but we are in the land of the Tree Killers, where every hand is against us, and we saw armed men.
Her eyes were gray, Rand saw, like his own.
You are in a stenning, Rian,
the Ogier said gently.
Everyone is safe in the steading, little sister. There is no fighting here, and no hand raised against another.
She nodded, ashamed, and the Ogier looked at Ingtar and the others. Ingtar sheathed his sword, and Rand did the same, though not so quickly as Huron, who looked almost as embarrassed as the Aiel. Perrin had never gotten his axe all the way out. As he took hand from hilt, Rand let the void go too, and shivered. The void went, but it left behind a slowly fading echo of the emptiness all through him, and a desire for something to fill it. The Ogier turned to Varen and bowed.
Aes Sedai, I am Juin, son of Laesel, son of Laud. I have come to take you to the elders. They would know why an Aes Sedai comes among us with armed men and one of our own youths.
Loyal hunched his shoulders as if trying to disappear. Varen gave the Aiel a regretful look, as if she wanted to talk with them, then motioned Juin to lead, and he took her away without another word or even the first look at Loyal. For a few moments, Rand and the others stood facing the three Aiel women uneasily. At least Rand knew he was uneasy. Ingtar seemed steady as a stone, with no more expression than one. The Aiel might have unveiled their faces, but they still had spears in their hands, and they studied the four men as though trying to see inside them. Rand, in particular, received increasingly angry looks. He heard the youngest woman mutter, He is wearing a sword, in tones of mingled horror and contempt. Then the three were leaving, stopping to retrieve the wooden bowl and looking over their shoulders at Rand and the others until they vanished among the trees.
"Maidens of the Spear," Ingtar muttered. "I never thought they'd stop once they veiled their faces. Certainly not for a few words."
He looked at Rand and his two friends.
"You should see a charge by red shields or stone dogs. As easy to stop as an avalanche."
"They would not break the pact once it was recalled to them,"
Aerith said, smiling.
"They came for Sungwood."
A note of pride entered her voice.
"We have two tree singers in Steading Tsofu. They are rare now. I have heard that Steading Shangtai has a young tree singer who is very talented, but we have two."
Loyal blushed, but she did not appear to notice.
"If you will come with me, I will show you where you may wait until the elders have spoken."
As they followed her, Perrin muttered, "Sung Wood, my left foot. Those Aiel are searching for he who comes with the dawn." And Matt added dryly,
"They're looking for you, Rand." "For me? That is crazy. What makes you think—"
He cut off as Aerith showed them down the steps of a wildflower-covered house apparently set aside for human guests. The rooms were 20 paces from stone wall to stone wall, with painted ceilings a good 2 spans above the floor. But the Ogier had done their best, making something that would be comfortable for humans. Even so, the furniture was a little too large for comfort, the chairs tall enough to lift a man's heels off the floor, the table higher than Rand's waist. Hurin, at least, could have walked erect in the stone fireplace, which seemed to have been worn by water rather than made by hands. Aerith eyed Loyal doubtfully, but he waved away her concern and pulled one of the chairs into the corner least easily seen from the door. As soon as the Ogier girl left, Rand got Matt and Perrin over to one side.
"What do you mean they're looking for me? Why? For what reason? They looked right at me and went away."
"They looked at you," Matt said with a grin, "like you hadn't bathed in a month and had doused yourself with sheep dip besides."
His grin faded.
"But they could be looking for you.
We met another Aiel."
Rand listened in growing amazement to their tale of the meeting in Kinslayer's Dagger. Matt told most of it, with Perrin putting in a correcting word now and again, when he embellished too much. Matt made a great show of how dangerous the Aielman had been, and how close the meeting had come to a fight.
"And since you're the only Aiel we know," he finished, "well, it could be you. Ingtar says Aiel never live outside the waste, so you must be the only one."
"I don't think that's funny, Matt," Rand growled. "I am not an Aiel."
"The Amaran said you are. Ingtar thinks you are. Tam said—" He was sick, fevered.
They had severed the roots he had thought he had, the Aes Sedai and Tam between them, though Tam had been too sick to know what he was saying. They had cut him loose to tumble before the wind, then offered him something new to hold on to. False dragon, Aiel. He could not claim those for roots. He would not.
"Maybe I don't belong to anyone, but the Two Rivers is the only home I know."
"I didn't mean anything," Matt protested. "It's just—" "Burn me, Ingtar says you are, Massima says you are, Yurian could have been your cousin, and if Rian put on a dress and said she was your aunt, you'd believe it yourself."
"Oh, all right. Don't look at me like that, Perrin. If he wants to say he isn't, all right. What difference does it make anyway?"
Perrin shook his head. Ogier girls brought water and towels for washing faces and hands, and cheese and fruit and wine, with pewter goblets a little too large to be comfortable in the hand. Other Ogier women came too, their dresses all embroidered. One by one they appeared, a dozen of them all told, to ask if the humans were comfortable, if they needed anything. Each turned her attentions to Loyal just before she left. He gave his answers respectfully, but in as few words as Rand had ever heard him use, standing with an Ogier-sized wood-bound book clutched to his chest like a shield, and when they went, he huddled in his chair with the book held up in front of his face. The books in the house were one thing not sized for humans.
"Just smell this air, Lord Rand," Hurin said, filling his lungs with a smile.
His feet dangled from one of the chairs at the table. He swung them like a boy.
"I never thought most places smelled bad, but this... Lord Rand, I don't think there's ever been any killing here. Not even any hurting, except by accident."
"The Steading are supposed to be safe for everyone," Rand said. He was watching Loyal. That's what the stories say, anyway. He swallowed a last bit of white cheese and went over to the Ogier. Matt followed with a goblet in his hand.
What's the matter, Loyal? Rand said. You've been as nervous as a cat in a dogyard ever since we came here.
It is nothing,
Loyal said, giving the door an uneasy glance from the corner of his eye.
Are you afraid they'll find out you left Steading Shangtai without permission from your elders?
Loyal looked around wildly, the tufts on his ears vibrating.
Don't say that,
he hissed.
Not where anyone can hear. If they found out...
With a heavy sigh, he slumped back, looking from Rand to Matt.
I don't know how humans do it, but among Ogier, if a girl sees a boy she likes, she goes to her mother. Or sometimes the mother sees someone she thinks is suitable. In any case, if they agree, the girl's mother goes to the boy's mother, and the next thing the boy knows, his marriage is all arranged.
Doesn't the boy have any say in it? Matt asked incredulously.
None. The women always say we would spend our lives married to the trees if it was left to us.
Loyal shifted, grimacing.
Half of our marriages take place between Steading. Groups of young Ogier visit from Steading to Steading so they can see and be seen. If they discover I'm outside without permission, the elders will almost certainly decide I need a wife to settle me down. Before I know it, they'll have sent a message to Steading Shangtai to my mother, and she will come here and have me married before she washes the dust off her journey. She always said I am too hasty and need a wife. I think she was looking when I left. Whatever wife she chooses for me, well, any wife at all, won't let me go back outside until I have gray in my beard. Wives always say no man should be allowed outside until he's settled enough to control his temper.
Matt gave a guffaw loud enough to draw every head, but at Loyal's frantic gesture, he spoke softly.
Among us, men do the choosing, and no wife can stop a man doing what he wants.
Rand frowned, remembering how Egwene had begun following him around when they were both little. It was then that Mistress Alvir had begun taking a special interest in him, more than in any of the other boys. Later, some girls would dance with him on feast days and some would not, and those who would were always Egwene's friends, while those who would not were girls Egwene did not like. He also seemed to remember Mistress Alvir taking Tam aside,
and she was muttering about Tam not having a wife for her to talk to.
And after that, Tam and everyone else had acted as if he and Egwene were promised, even though they had not knelt before the women's circle to say the words. He had never thought about it this way before. Things between Egwene and him had always just seemed to be the way they were, and that was that.
I think we do it the same way, he muttered, and when Matt laughed, he added,
Do you remember your father ever doing anything your mother really didn't want him to? Matt opened his mouth with a grin, then frowned thoughtfully and closed it again. Juan came down the steps from outside.
If you please, will all of you come with me? The elders would see you.
He did not look at Loyal, but Loyal still almost dropped the book.
If the elders try to make you stay, Rand said, we'll say we need you to go with us. I'll bet it isn't about you at all, Matt said. I'll bet they are just going to say we can use the waygate.
He shook himself, and his voice fell even lower.
We really have to do it, don't we?
It was not a question.
Stay and get married or travel the ways,
Loyal grimaced ruefully.
Life is very unsettling with Taviran for friends.